Hello and welcome to episode 3 of the Brand Podcast, the podcast by creative-minded people, made for and about creative-minded people. I am Pete Davis, Live Your Brand. Now, after the last episode of the podcast, I was asked what I meant by Live Your Brand, and with me today is someone who, in many respects, epitomises the saying. Now, I'm talking to Jamie Gilbert, who by day is the owner of JG Printing, but by night becomes the UK indie wrestler, the exceptional Sugar Jimmy Vice. A wrestler, in his own words, so sweet, he'll make your teeth hurt. Welcome to the podcast, Jamie. How are you?
I'm good. It's so weird hearing that back, like, because I'm normally the one that says it. So it's just like, it makes me cringe. Like, what am I doing?
Oh, God. But
it's true. Yeah. It's true. You know, it's a disclaimer.
Now, obviously, here on the branding podcast, looking from a view of naivety in many respects, it could be easy to think the printing business and the world of wrestling are a bit of a lifetime away from one another. But as I dug into it a little bit further, it was clear to me you've developed both of the brands together in some way, shape or form. Because when we met more than a decade ago, Jamie Gilbert was destined, to be an entrepreneur in some way, because he wasn't happy toeing the line. He wasn't happy sitting there and being told what to do. He always wanted to think bigger. And he was also always the showman. He was the guy who wanted to laugh and joke and the sort of person who would wear a pair of gold wrestling style pants during football matches. So Jamie Gilbert, being his boss, I've got to be honest, from what I saw, was always going to be hard for some people. So I want you to take me back to a time when you decided you wanted to go out on your own in business and why you took on the direction of printing on T-shirts and clothing.
So it was... at a time, I'm not going to get too sort of deep and emotional into it, but it was a time where just after my dad had passed away, and the girl that I was with was a dance teacher. So she basically needed uniform printing for her students. I was due to be made redundant from the tow bar job that I was working. So as you said yourself, it's never been my dream to work for somebody else. I've always wanted the freedom and the endless possibilities of being able to take yourself further than you can under a corporate umbrella, or, you know, within a team environment, you know, that you can't go past the ceiling, you know, that you can progress and you can progress, but there's a limit to it. So it just basically fell into that at the start. Just started obviously printing the dancewear, and then, you know, the occasional stag do, hen do, things like that. But the kind of journey at the start was so, I guess, for a number of reasons, mourning the loss of my dad. I broke up with the aforementioned girlfriend. So it kind of went on a journey of, it wanted to be my full-time position, but finances wouldn't quite allow it. So I kept having to seek work. Obviously, as soon as I was in a job, I didn't want to be in that job. I wanted to be doing my own thing. Yeah. So I'd get to a point where it was like, right, okay, I'm going to give up work. I'm busy enough. I'm going to do it. And then the nerves and the panic would set in, and I'd last probably a few weeks to a month. And then I'd be like, no, I need to go and get a job. I can't sustain this. I don't like it. It's not nice. It's horrible. You know, there's no guaranteed income. There's bills keep coming in. And so, yeah, so this kind of happened backwards and forwards for quite a few years, to be honest. Up until 2018, I think it was, the memory popped up actually a few days ago, where I basically bought a load of new machinery and I quit my job that there and then. And I worked solidly for, I think it was best part of a year, just doing the business, you know, just giving it my everything. And again, it come to a point where stuff happened in my life and I couldn't sustain the income that I was bringing from it. So I wanted to get to a certain position with screen printing, couldn't get there, applied for numerous grants and things. And, you know, so yeah, I'm kind of condensing it because the journey, we could be here for days speaking about it. You know, there really has been so many twists and turns, so much stress, heartache, happiness, sadness, joy, everything that you can even imagine going through. So I kind of sought employment again, and then I actually got to a point where I'd basically had enough of where I was with the printing that I was doing, And I basically sold everything that I had with a view to buying some new equipment and starting again. But at the time of that happening, again, loads of personal stuff going on, ended up moving out and moving into my own place with the girl that I was with. And then obviously pumped all of my money into that house and kind of put the printing on the back burner and actually sought a full-time job as a bin man. So for, I think it was, I sold it in the August. So I didn't actually do any printing of the back end of, I think it was 2019, I think. So I didn't buy it back until January 2020. And then lo and behold, 2 months later.
Okay. So, I mean, obviously it's been a long journey by the sound of things for the business and for JG Printing as a brand, to be fair, and a lot of ups and downs. And, you know, we'll get onto them a little bit later. But early on, I did notice, you mentioned about your stag and hen do's, obviously the dance schools that got you into it. I noticed as well that you actually got some work printing for these companies for a large, I won't name any names, but a large supermarket chain and a fast food restaurant. Okay. And this is going to bring me on to the next part in a second. Obviously, without giving away any of your secrets, how does a small business like yourself manage to build these kind of clients, this kind of client base, I should say?
I guess, as cliche as it sounds, it's having confidence in your own product. You have to kind of have a belief in what you're selling, I feel, to be able to passionately sell it and confidently sell it without having to hard sell.
How does that work with, because you mentioned about the nerves and the concerns and the panic of, you know, I need to go and get another job. Was it those nerves and that panic that said to yourself, do you know what, if I'm going to make a go of this, I really need to go into these places and sell to these places? Because as you say, you believe in the product you're selling, which you should, you know, we should all do as the brand we're dealing with.
Yeah, definitely. I'm not a proactive seller. I'm more of a reactive seller. So I've never been good at cold calling. I've never been good at turning up on someone's doorstep unannounced, or, you know, I'm quite happy once somebody approaches me, I will talk to them, and I'm confident enough that I'll be able to sell them something. And that's been in every avenue of my working life. And obviously having a business, part of it is sales. So I've kind of pulled from some of the experiences that I've had, whether it kitchen sales, car sales, auto part sales, there's elements of that I've pulled. But the companies that you mentioned, I didn't actually approach them. They approached me, and it was basically down to a manager of one of the stores that was basically working at both of them. So they had two jobs and they were manager of both. And they'd seen some of my printing from somebody else that I'd done, saw the quality, saw the, you know, the turnaround and everything like that. And like I said, they approached me. So it was unfortunate that it never got bigger than what it was, but it was just, as with a lot of companies, they tried to run with something that they thought was going to be the next big thing and amazing. And unfortunately, it didn't quite pan out for them, I think, how they envisioned. So they kind of stopped pushing and moving with that. But I still printed for several stores. So that was, it's always a nice one to be able to say.
And proof that you and your brand, obviously, you know, there was some respect there and there was great opportunity and belief in yourself by somebody else at the very least, even if the nerves and concerns in your own head, even if they were there. So linking that very, very flimsily on from the whole, you know, working and building these client bases, because I'm going to move slightly now, shift gear and move slightly into the wrestling. Around 2016, you started working with not only some smaller wrestling companies and some local wrestling associations, but again, you know, these nerves, this panic, this concern that you weren't good enough, etc. You also started to work with two pretty big names in many respects. Again, doing a little bit of digging, a guy called Marty Jones, who actually wrestled in the 80s and 90s for companies like the WWE, who trained ex-WWF/WWE wrestler William Regal, who fought, again, I had to do a bit of digging, never realized this, fought for the world mid-heavyweight champion in 1982. Do you know who he beat in the semifinals to win that?
The name that springs to mind is Owen Hart, but
it was Brett, which then links into the other person you started working with around about that time, a certain guy called Harry Smith, otherwise known as Davey Boy Smith Jr., i.e. British Bulldog, his son, and Diana Hart, which is Bret Hart's sister, you started working with these two. So, you know, again, we go back to this whole, you know, I've got all these concerns and this worry that I'm not going to be good enough and I'm going to have to go and get a normal job. And yet you're building your client base with two people who have fought at the very highest level, or certainly two brands, because the Hart brand and the British Bulldog brand, that Davey Boy Smith brand, two of the biggest brands in wrestling. I mean, how did all that come about?
I guess there's a part of it that is always, no matter what, it's always right place, right time. I think if there's one thing that I can pass on to anybody that is looking at building any brand, any business, anything for themselves, is networking is one of the most important, if not the most important part of your business, your brand, your anything that is to do with you trying to take something forward, whether that be financially or, you know, personal, because you never know where these, can you just print a t-shirt for my daughter's 6th birthday? You never know where that is then going to lead, which I'll cover more maybe a bit later on if I remember, but that's why I'm kind of an advocate for never kind of turning my nose up at people that come to me and just want one t-shirt, because I'd say probably 80% of my referrals or bigger customers that have come my way have been on the back of printing a one-off t-shirt on a Sunday morning for somebody that, you know, had forgotten was going to a birthday party, or, you know, and it's not always ideal and it's not always great and it's not always the most profitable, but you never know where that one t-shirt or that one hoodie is going to lead you next. And that's basically what happened with Marty. I got referred to him from somebody else that I'd already printed for, because he'd put out a status on Facebook. I was kind of blasé on who he was.
Don't get me wrong, I didn't know who he was, to be honest. So,
I mean, obviously I know now and I know a lot more about him, and I've spent quite a lot of time with him. I've spoke to him quite a lot. I've done quite a few of his wrestling seminars and things like that. So I know a lot more about him now. But at the time, I didn't realise, just like, without sounding rude to him, I didn't realise who he was, and I didn't realise just how big a reach he actually had. You know, it popped me just as much the first time that I saw him share William Regal's status that he put on about Marty, saying that basically he wouldn't be where he is now without Marty. Bret Hart, as you can sit there, my little montage of the evening that I had with him, Marty was there. Marty managed to get me in VIP. I paid a fraction of the price for the ticket, because him and Bret, obviously, as you mentioned, go way back. So he was off the back of somebody else, and I worked very closely with him and very sort of detailed with him as well to try and get everything that he actually wanted and, you know, and sorted. So, and then he basically referred me onto Harry. So it just kind of fell naturally and nicely into that. So I can't stop grinning. I'm sorry. I love it, because it was, I think it was 3 years ago now, or 2 years. Yeah, 3 years ago that I'd basically gone down to Cheltenham, and it was when I first met Harry, and I'd given him the merch that I'd printed for him. There's a picture up there of me handing, I think, Bret one of Harry's t-shirts that I'd printed that Harry gave him as a gift.
Okay.
I can't help but smile, because it's something I've printed for, you know.
Well, it's wrestling royalty, to be fair.
I mean, being sat in McDonald's at 2 a.m. with Harry, Georgia, just sitting there speaking about Bret and Owen and Davey Boy and, you know, Pillman, and just hearing about all the old days and hearing about their family. And it was one of those moments that I've got goosebumps talking about it, because I sat there and the only words that I could say was just, wow, like this is unreal. Like, as we are talking now, it was just normal conversation, but it was about Bret and Owen, Davey Boy. Yeah, yeah. They did, like, all the people that I'd looked up to and was starry-eyed over when I was younger. So, yeah, that's it. Sorry, I'm starting to go more wrestling, or I don't mean to, but yeah, that's basically how it was. So anybody watching or listening, or basically, networking is so important. And I suppose never look a gift horse in the mouth, as they say. So
when I grew up, those are the wrestlers I watched, you know, the Bret and the Owen Harts, you know, the Davey Boy Smith. Those are the guys I watched, the Hulk Hogan's, etc. You know, the 80s and the 90s, that was my era of wrestling. Okay, so where was it that your love of not only watching these wrestlers and enjoying these wrestlers came about that made you decide you were going to branch not only into printing goods for, as you say, you know, the likes of Davey Boy Smith Jr., etc., but then you started to move into smaller indie wrestling such as APW and Coventry Pro Wrestling, all these sorts of wrestling that I'd never heard of, but all of a sudden you're starting to print for them? And was it then when, you know, your interest in actually getting involved in wrestling came about, or had that been there all along?
CPW is separate from, and I will get onto that a bit later, but they do their own printing. The owner of CPW has got his own printing business. So as I said, I'll get back onto that a bit later on to how I got into CPW. But yeah, basically, APW is the one to speak of, really, because, again, Marty Jones had come to Telford. He'd done a seminar and I think he stayed on for the show as well, and did like ring announcing for them.
And were you just a fan at this point?
Yes. So as far back as I can remember, I never wanted to be a footballer. I always wanted to be a wrestler. That was always my dream. Got stick for it at school because it was like, you know, because it wasn't normal. It was like, oh, why don't you want to be a footballer? You know, it's, but that was just my dream. You know, I used to mess around with a few mates and we used to put matches on and things like that and jump off each other's sofas onto each other and all sorts. So obviously Marty had phoned me and said that he'd just been to Telford and that he'd mentioned me because they were looking for somebody to do printing. So he basically gave me the details of obviously who to speak to and things like that. So I approached Luke, messaged him, arranged a meeting for Friday evening, which just so happened to be when they were training. So I went kind of, you know, sort of smart, you know, jeans, shoes, the decent wear. I wish I'd have just gone in my joggers now, because obviously the meeting went really, really well. But all I could hear the whole time we were talking was the bumps in the ring and the wrestling noise and the, again, goosebumps, because it just, the feeling of being around that is amazing. So it was kind of like one of those where, if I look back now, I was probably maybe being a bit rude in parts, because it was like, you know, if there's a TV on in the room and someone's talking to you and you'll hear something and you're like, what were you saying? And then you'll kind of like glance at that. That's what it was like. I couldn't help it. So as I said, we finished it. I basically just said to him, I've always wanted to be a wrestler. You know, what's the ins and outs of it? What do I need to do? When do I need to, you know, when do you train? How much is it? You know, all the information. He then took me through to where they were training, which is mad to think now, because this is, I've known these guys now years.
Well, I think at this point as well, we should say spoiler warning for anybody that doesn't know that wrestling, I'm not going to say it's not real, because that's not fair, because they're real athletes and I would not want to be in the ring because my knees, I'd know for a fact, wouldn't be able to take it and all the rest of it. But spoiler warning, just in case anybody, you know, is sees the TV, just like magicians, they see the magic happen on the TV and they don't want to know what happens behind the curtain. So spoiler warning for anybody from here on out.
It's quite funny because I still do get stick now, you know, I just take it with a pinch of salt, because there's not many people that can say they're living their dream. So, you know, I had it a lot when I was on the bins, because obviously word got round I was a wrestler. So everyone wanted to have the wrestler on their crew at one point so they could ask them about it. Not because I was popular or because they were intrigued. But you'd always get the guy that would be sat in the middle of the truck like this and he'd be like, wrestling's shit. Wrestling's crap. It's fake. It's rubbish. And I was like, okay. I said, so you were talking about the Avengers earlier, weren't you? And he was like, yeah, amazing film, amazing. I was like, see Captain America recently, have you? You know, just like, is he real? You know, Harry Potter, is there really a castle in Scotland? You know, but I'm sure you enjoyed that.
No, but I get what you're saying. because you know, the first time when I found out that yourself and another friend, another guy I've known for years, were wrestlers, I'm taken aback. I'm a bit shocked because, first of all, I didn't really know there was much of an indie scene in the UK. And I can promise you now, Daryl, who was on the podcast last week, a good friend of mine, he's a huge indie wrestling fan, as is another friend of mine, George. And they're talking about all these factions of sport that I never knew existed. Okay. So when I find out that two friends of mine actually wrestle, you know, I'm really taken aback. I'm really shocked. And going along to it, you know, there's a certain amount of an excitement. And yeah, you kind of think to yourself, you know, although this is obviously, you know, it's not real and people really aren't actually trying to kill each other. But I watched guys get knocked down and you could see that they were grimacing. I watched a guy injure his knee during a match, I think lasted about half an hour. And when he came out later on, he struggled to walk. So it is real. It is entertainment, but it is also, you know, a sport. And it will always have, you know, that air of, oh, it's not real, it's fake, it's, you know. But the truth of the matter is, as an entertainment industry, it's got to be up there amongst the best. So you've gone there, you've decided, I'd actually quite like to take a peek behind the scenes. I'd actually like to get involved. Where do we go from Jamie Gilbert selling his company to make some T-shirts and some merchandise to the exceptional sugar Jimmy Vice?
So obviously that night that I met, I think it was the next Friday, may have been the Friday after. I can't quite remember, but I basically went along, and I had actually had some experience. I'd done one or two training sessions elsewhere, just through a friend at the time, and I'd actually taken a couple of bumps in a ring at a carnival show as well. So that kind of gave me the bug, but I kind of forgot about it, if that makes sense. Like, I'd kind of not put it to bed, but I'd kind of thought, well, I'm not going to travel all the way over there to do it. I'm not going to, you know, I didn't even know there was one in Telford at the time. And maybe that was a bit lazy on my behalf, not researching. But
that goes with marketing as well, doesn't it?
I don't know. Yeah, definitely. So basically, I started training and just got hooked. Absolutely loved it. Loved the family environment, loved the passion, the just everything. Just, you know, it was amazing to be around, and it felt right. It felt like I'm trying to think of the right phrase, but I knew that I'd arrived where I knew I should be and where I'd wanted to be without maybe ever really thinking about it. And it kind of only rang true when a family friend came up from Cornwall who I hadn't seen for years. And I basically told him, you know, expecting to get loads of jib. And he was like, fucking finally. He was like, that is all you used to bang on about as a kid when you used to be like sat next to me on the sofa and you'd chat my head off for hours on end about this wrestler and this one. And like, you'd be body slamming a pillow on the floor. And he said, like, I'm so happy that you're actually doing what you as a kid put so much passion into. So it just kind of like it hooked me and went from there. So I trained really hard, not only in the ring, but obviously started focusing on not so much weight training as such, but, you know, like HIIT workouts and learning about different, you know, muscle groups and all that sort of things to kind of get to a match level fitness, because it is very stop start. It is very fast paced at times, but you know, a 10 minute match will leave you gasping for air, where, you know yourself, I can run around a football field for 90 minutes and be absolutely fine, be a bit tired, but there's nothing that I've ever done in my life that compares to being in the ring, just down to the adrenaline that you get, the physicality of it, the fact that you are working with the other person to make sure that neither of you gets hurt. You've still got to play to the audience, you've still got to sell, you've still got to, you know, there's so much that goes into it that even, like I said, in an 8-10 minute match, I've come back through the curtain and pretty much, you know, collapsed on the floor gasping for air, because you've just put everything into it. So I started training for all that, and then I got asked, after I'd printed all the merch, as you probably saw, if you've, by the sounds of it, you've done quite a lot of digging. So
I'm not a stalker, but I've done a little bit, yeah.
You've been attentive. That's what we'll say.
Thank you.
But yeah, so you probably saw that the one of the pictures that I had as my cover photo for quite a while was basically the Academy Pro Wrestling, as it was called back then.
Right, yeah.
The merch stand that I'd set up, I'd printed, and I actually manned. So I got to watch my first show as well. And obviously, being around the guys for a few weeks and watching them train and, you know, seeing them then come out and be their personas or their characters, or, you know, watching them put into action what they'd been planning and training, it was then that it was just like, yeah, this, I need to be in that ring. This is what, like, I will stop at nothing until I'm there.
And at what point did you decide what your brand was going to be? What sort of style of wrestler you were going to be? You know, your persona. At what point did you decide what route you were going to take?
So I found it really difficult for the name. I always knew, character-wise, if I was going to be a bad guy, my character was always going to be a Ravishing Rick Rude, Mr. Perfect.
Yeah.
So that's how I wanted to look. That's how I, you know, originally that's why I grew my hair, because I was going to get it permed, because I wanted to be Mr. Perfect. So that's like, so those were the ones that I wanted to kind of base my sort of style around. But the name, I struggled. I was called JJ Carter. I went through so many different names, and just, I was Van Gilbert for a bit, and it just, none of them would just, it just wouldn't stick. And it was the training session before my actual debut, I think was like a week before, I was doing a run-in. So I basically was sat on the merch table as the merch guy, you know, Jamie the merch guy, but I had my suit jacket underneath the merch table. So when my cue came, obviously I hopped the fence, I had my jacket on, hopped the fence, interfered in the match, and then so yeah, which you'll probably see my picture as well, was one of my, where I was in front of the ring with my jacket on, and yeah, so that was my first in. But it was only, like I said, a week before the name, actually a week or 2 weeks before, because we had a photo shoot so I could get some promo pictures done. And I actually went on a shopping trip because I was going to do a run-in in just normal clothes, just, you know, jeans, a normal t-shirt, you know, nothing special. And someone pulled me to one side and said, you now need to stop being Jamie while you're here.
Yeah.
Like, I was reffing as well before I made my debut. So obviously I'd had exposure to the crowd, so they'd seen me on the merch stand, they'd seen me ref in. He was like, you need to do away with that side of it now. You need to be your character, you need to be. And like I said, we didn't have a name at this point, so that was bugging me. But basically went to Primark and kitted myself out with some tight skinny jeans, a pink t-shirt and this grey suit jacket, sunglasses and a lollipop. So I was having my pictures done, which I think are still on my Facebook page somewhere, because there's no real branding on there. It's just a pink t-shirt and my jacket. And somebody just walked past and they went, oh, bloody hell, that's a bit Miami Vice. And then the guy that was due to manage me at the time, the light bulb just went off in his head and he was like, fuck yeah, Sugar Jimmy Vice. He was like, it just kind of clicked from there. Because he came up, I think, with Jimmy Vice at first, and he was like, no, it needs something else. And obviously I took the lollipop out of my mouth and he went, Sugar Jimmy Vice. This, you know. And the exceptional part of it came off another idea from somebody else earlier when I was JJ Carter. And I actually had merch made for myself and everything as JJ Carter. But that was exceptional over normality. And that was going to be the slogan. So I basically dropped the normality and just kept exceptional. So yeah, so that's how that was it, that was born. But basically Jimmy Vice is just me, but
just you. How, yeah.
Well, that's always the best characters. It makes me cringe a little bit, but they always say the best characters are basically you are just you but turned up to 100.
Right.
So you've seen me on I think you've come to one, but I think you've come to maybe three shows where you've seen me. So my stupid cockiness in the ring, my antics, my that's you've worked with me, that's just me, like, yeah. but like I said,
just
more,
dialed up, like you say.
Yeah, yeah.
And how difficult is it staying in that character around people who you don't really know? When they want to come for a photograph afterwards, you know, do you feel like you've got to stay in that character, keep that brand going, or do you want to let the facade down a little bit?
I don't know whether you'd have seen him there, but a wrestler called Jamie Future, who I look up to a lot. Basically, he's a heel, and he's through and through. He is so hated. He's, you know, he's a scumbag. Like, he's horrible. Right. You know, the things he says on the mic just literally annoy people. But he is so damn good at it, and he's such a great wrestler, and his character work is phenomenal. But he refuses to come out until all the fans are gone, because he's like, I am a bad guy. Why the hell am I going to come out and talk to people when I've just spent 20 minutes slagging them off? Or, you know, he's like, he will literally stay away from people because, yeah, I don't want to spoil it, but it's like, I know him obviously personally, and it's just, he keeps that character alive. And, you know, even to the point where I've been, a kid has snuck round the side and he's poked his head through, and he's gone, Jamie Future, are you really going to, like, are you really nasty guy? And he's just like, yeah, get away, kid. Like, you know, it just to the point where it's even, because he's very old school. Yeah, kayfabe. And so whereas I suppose, in a way, my character is kind of like, I'm a sleazy scumbag, but...
What are you trying to say about yourself there, Jamie?
Well...
Because when you talk about your character as you, but turn up to 100, again, I've seen your character in some respects, your brand change slightly. Now, when you started, certainly with that club, Tropicana, there's an arrogance, yet a bit of fun. You know, you play to the crowd. It's clearly a performance. But I've also seen, this is going to be a strange thing to say, but I've also listened or watched one of the videos and listened to Jimmy Vice, the sex symbol, where women are screaming your name during matches because, you know, they want you to win and come on. And then more recently, certainly in the last year or so, you teamed with another guy, Joe Black, and became Business and Pleasure. Now, Joe Black seemed to have been more of a face, more of a good guy from what I'd seen. So you kind of went from being that heel and you kind of moved around. You don't seem to have stuck in one place. You don't seem to have stuck, you know, as one persona. Your branding seems to be able to shift with the times, depending, I guess, on how many women are screaming your name or not.
Yeah, it's great. Like, I love it. I love the fact that, you know, you can go to one promotion and you'll be asked to be a heel. You'll go to another promotion and they need you to be a face. I went to FCW. I wrestled there just after my debut at APW, and I was a heel. But basically, the owner of FCW saw me in all the pink, loved the gimmick, loved the name. And he was like, I need you to be a face, and I'm going to put you with Joe, and you two are going to tag, and we're going to call you Business and Pleasure.
So that wasn't your decision. That was the promoter and the owner of FCW. Yes. He'd made the decision there. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Because they needed more tag teams in their division. He needed a face tag team. And, you know, they kind of tested the water with us because I was still very, very green, you know, still fresh. Yeah. I'd only wrestled, you know, one or two matches. So I was still, you know, my earlier videos, I was still in Lonsdale boxing boots rather than my proper wrestling boots, because I hadn't got round or got my head around the fact that I bought the singlet because that was like a given. But the boots were like, obviously they're expensive, and I hadn't quite grasped the fact of, when I walk through that curtain, I am a brand. So you need to invest in that brand. Like, because if anybody's watching you and they like you, they see you, they hear you, they hear about you, and they watch you and you're wearing, you know, something that doesn't quite fit them, then, you know, I suppose it's like, for example, somebody starting a new business, but then just not bothering with their logo, or, you know, it's the first thing that people tend to see. And exactly the same with being a wrestler. You know, if they look down and your boots aren't matching your gear, then they're going to think, well, is he really bothered? Is he, you know, and that's not knocking anybody that does well Lonsdale boots whatever. It's just something that was drummed into me by veterans and by people who'd been around the indie scene a long time, is that you need to invest in your gear. So yeah, so good bit of advice.
So obviously you mentioned earlier on about how the character and persona came about.
Yeah.
And you've just started talking about your clothing there. Now earlier on we talked about Bret Hart and the fact that, you know, you'd met his sister and all the rest of it. Your outfit, the pink, it's very Hart Foundation. Was that, being a huge Bret Hart and Owen Hart fan, was that a decision? I got to be honest with you, most people I would think would go into wrestling and think, you know what, I'm going to wear black. You know, it seems to be the easiest color to wear, whether you're a good or baddie, because it doesn't show off everything. Whereas you've gone out there and gone, do you know what, I'm going to wear bright pink.
Yeah, no, I mean, real men wear pink. Like, it just...
no, very true.
But no, obviously, yes, my gear, my logo, the fact I wear sunglasses, they're all pulled from my love of Bret Hart. So if you actually look at my logo, I've got wings, like Bret Hart had the wings on the skull. I've got a star, which Bret Hart had a star on his boots. The glasses, obviously, Bret Hart used to wear, not shades, but he would wear the wraparounds. So, yeah, so everything about that, you know, the pink and black was very early Hart Foundation. And then, you know, it was styled kind of almost on Owen Hart's gear as a, like a homage to both of them. You know, I said to the guy who designed my logo, I said, Bret Hart, see what you can do.
Yeah.
It was always what I wanted.
And with that, obviously the style of wrestler you are, did you look into that, or did you just, you know, I'm just going to go with the flow, or did you kind of look at it and decide, I want to be, you know, the sort of wrestler who goes around careering into people, or, you know, I want to be somebody who flies off the top rope. You know, was there a decision in how you branded yourself that way, or was it just a case of, I'll just do whatever I can, given my abilities?
I'd love to be more technical. So I'd love to be able to chain wrestle like Bret and Owen could, with all the different holds and getting in and out of them. And it's something I need to work on. So you won't see me doing very much technical wrestling, but I'm kind of like a good all-rounder, really, because I can do the moonsaults off the top rope, and I can do the dives over the top rope or through the ropes. I can do the big high-impact moves. You know, I'm fairly strong. I've had Regan up on my shoulders that I've deadlifted from the floor. He didn't like being up high. But so I kind of like being able to do a little bit of everything, you know, and I'll always add little bits in from different things, depending on what match it is. So I don't really have a particular style. I've been told in some of my matches I look like Mr. Perfect, which was amazing. I've been told look very similar to Kurt Angle with some of my strikes and things. So it's all very good feedback. It's all, you know, very amazing feedback. Yeah. So it's just, I don't kind of have anybody that I go, right, I am going to copy their move for move, and this is what I'm going to do. I guess I've just kind of found my own style and my own groove with it. It's very, very difficult nowadays to be original because every move has been done. You know, I started to change from the lollipop because everyone was doing a lollipop and sunglasses, because it looks arrogant, like a lollipop or a matchstick or a... So I started bringing a toothbrush out and basically handing it to women in the audience and saying, I'm Jimmy Vice, and the man's so sweet, I'll rot your teeth, so make sure you brush them. And I'd walk off.
Okay. Good advice too, so...
Exactly. You know, it's like I said, it's the, you know, the warning, the disclaimer that comes before watching me, you know, I can't be sued then, you know, if teeth start falling out.
We mentioned earlier that, you know, I have done a little bit of research here. So I looked at some of your sort of career progression, to be honest with you. And as we kind of went from the back end of 2018, you start to wrestle for more and more wrestling, what are they called, federation championships, whatever, you know, there's international professional wrestling at the end of 2018. There was Wolfram Pro Wrestling, Future Championship Wrestling, Next Gen Wrestling, where wrestled a male-female tag team against another male-female tag team, which apparently was the first one in their history, I believe. You know, you went to the Berkshire Championship Wrestling And obviously you were at Coventry Professional Wrestling and became the Galaxy Heavyweight Champion back at the end of 2019. So all this from, and obviously APW as well. Mustn't forget them, because that's where it all kind of began. But all this career progression, as you got towards the end of late 2019, looked like Jimmy Vice was really going somewhere. Do you feel like there were big plans for yourself in 2020? I mean, I'm not going to say, you know, NXT UK just yet, but how high did you think you could go? You know, where did you see yourself going, you know, in 2020 before everything shut down, obviously? And going into 2021, potentially 2022, the way things are going, because it could be the back end of this year before we start to see some sort of pathway out of the whole pandemic. Has the break allowed you, do you feel, to heal up and to go forward? Or has it been more of a hindrance, do you feel, in your career because you really felt like you were ready to start to break into, you know, because you were obviously going further afield than the local area. So how do you feel like the pandemic has it hindered you or has it made you fresh and ready to go in 2021, 2022?
There's two sides to 2020 because I was on the back end of a great year, debuted at many promotions, had won my first singles title, which to anybody who, again, doesn't know about wrestling, or obviously, yes, it is predetermined, yes, it is an entertainment, but being given the belt at any promotion that you are at is basically, as a wrestler, that's what you should always be aiming for. And actually, you know, getting to a position where you're in a title match just in itself is an indication of the trust, the belief, the confidence that the promoter has in you to be able to be that poster boy or girl, male or female. So yeah, it's a huge responsibility. It's a huge achievement. Being crowned a champion is an amazing feeling. So
of course,
coming off the back of that, losing it and then being locked down was a bit of a kick in the ass. It just knocked the wind out of my sails. And I think I speak on behalf of quite a few of my fellow wrestlers. I think we all went through a point where we're like, because it all of a sudden got taken away from us, a lot of people started to question, like, we've got all this free time now on a weekend. Like, we've actually missed this. Do we really want to go back? Is it worth it? Is it, you know, you kind of question it. When you're away from anything, you get that, those moments of clarity and those moments of, you know, just being able to factor things like you have got more time over weekend. You are not spending, you know, from 12 o'clock in the afternoon until 1 o'clock in the morning at a show. You know, you've got a whole Saturday to yourself. You're not, you know, and then you're waking up Sunday and you're not sore and you're fresh and you're okay. And you, so I went through a point where I did actually think, like, I've won a singles belt, I've won the tag belts, I've lived my dream. If this doesn't come back, or if this doesn't give me the opportunity, you know, whenever this ends, because obviously we didn't know when we first went into it, you know, we're all naive. Oh, we'll be back to normal in a few weeks. And
of course, yeah,
little did we know, you know, fast forward a year. So obviously I kind of made peace with the fact that I ticked a lot of boxes. I'd debuted at several promotions. I'd won a belt. I'd won the tag belts. I'd sold a load of T-shirts. I'd met a load of amazing people. So I was actually okay. I was, you know, and I did actually go and do a show during the first lockdown. So there has been a couple of promotions. But I think CPW's is one of the only ones that's really ran during the whole time. So, and this has all been done above board. It's all been agreed with councils and local authorities. It's been signed off by the police. Everything has been put in place. So you were put in match bubbles. Temperature was taken. You were hand sanitized. Face masks. So everything was was safer basically than walking into your local supermarket is how we made. So I went and did a show, and it was obviously my first time doing a show in front of no fans. The cameras were rolling, you know, this was being pre-recorded to then go out later that week on pay-per-view on their website. And it was weird. It was like, it was completely different to what I'd obviously knew. It was difficult. I really, really struggled. So after that, I again, I went home, I sat and did some thinking, and I was like, if this is what wrestling is actually going to be, like, I don't know whether I want it anymore.
Well, it must be very difficult to G yourself up when there's no crowd. But obviously, most people will have seen, anybody who's a wrestling fan will have seen WWE and all the others on TV, and there's nobody in the crowd, and the wrestlers are all kind of standing around and gesturing like they do, but there's nobody there. And it must be difficult to get that adrenaline going. You know, you're not feeding off that crowd energy.
Yeah. So obviously I did that show. I adapted okay. I was very, very, very unfit match-wise, not as in general, because as you know, playing football, you can be fit, but you try and play 90
minutes. We've already discussed that there's lots of women screaming for you, so that, you know, we all know that you're very fit, Jamie.
Yeah, you have got a very high-pitched squeal, to be fair, when you come to the show.
Cut the interview, it's done.
I went home and I did some thinking, and it was nothing like what I'd enjoyed. And like I said just now, I kind of made peace with, I'm okay. If I need to walk away, I can do it with my head held high. And I actually stopped thinking about wrestling. I turned down a couple more opportunities at CPW just because it just didn't feel right, and basically went a little while. And it wasn't until I watched I think it was 6 or 7 episodes of The Undertaker's story on the WWE network. And it was basically following him backstage, showing, you know, never before seen bits and pieces, interviewing him at his home. And it wasn't until I watched that and saw that he was obviously retiring, and he made the announcement on there, you know, that it was going to be his last one when he faced AJ Styles in the graveyard match, I think it was. So that was going to be his last one. And it wasn't until I kind of saw him getting upset and like talking about his career and, you know, all the little bits and pieces, and the fact that he'd wrestled for like 30 years. And he didn't want to give up. His body was forcing him to give up what he'd known.
It became his life, didn't it, to be honest? So as a wrestler, especially at that level.
Well, it shows you in the documentary of he was having to be snuck in and out of buildings because, like, back in the kayfabe days, they genuinely thought he was from, like, Death Valley, and he was The Undertaker. But, yeah, so seeing him obviously getting emotional about having to give up something, and, you know, it hit me like deep in the feels. It you know, it, to the point I'm not ashamed to. I blubbed my eyes out at it, because I can to give it up now, like in the small experiences that I've had, it in comparison to The Undertaker. I mean, they're massive for me, but he lived, breathed. He was, you know, 350 odd days on the road. He was, you know, he was the Undertaker every day of the week, you know, he Madison Square Garden, all of that. But, you know, he was walking away from that, and he wasn't ready, and he didn't want to. And it just hit me, like I said, and I was like, I'm not okay with walking away. Like, I'm not ready. I want to do this for a long, long time, and I want to push it as far as I can go. So I basically started doing the shows when I could again, and then very quickly adapted to the fans not being there. So obviously I still get a buzz off it now. It's a different kind of buzz, because you play up to a camera and you have the commentary team that you can't normally hear, but you can hear them now. So that's now my audience. So
okay.
When I'm at CPW and Mr. Richards is on the commentary table and he's giving me grief over the, you know, over the mic, that's who I go over, because the hard cam's right behind him. So, you know,
it's just changing your audience, basically.
Yeah, definitely. And like I said, the adrenaline's still there. The buzz has come back like massively, and it's all I can do at the moment. So I've had to, like I said, adapt, and I've had to enjoy while I can. I'm very, very fortunate that CPW are putting on shows, and they are, you know, like I said earlier, I haven't got to say it, but, you know, everything's in place. The local authorities, the everything's signed off and it's as safe as it can be, you know. So I'm very fortunate that I'm still able to do something that I love in the capacity that I am. So I know I digressed a little bit there, but that's basically how I saw 2020.
Yeah.
To then how it actually was. Obviously, by the end of 2020, I was quite happy. I'd accomplished quite a lot still and was still able to do what I enjoyed.
So the future for Jimmy Vice, you still want to be involved in wrestling by the sound of things. And hopefully as things move out of the pandemic and we start to see crowds come back, that buzz that's still there will obviously only get stronger from there. So I'm going to sort of swing things around now and circle back to JG Printing, linking it with the wrestling. Have you seen any positives or negatives as you as a wrestler and that persona you show in the ring on the business of JG Printing? Obviously the positives, we know about the, you know, your business is expanded by printing for not only the indie wrestlers, et cetera, but you know, the bigger guys like Davey Boy Smith Jr. But have there been any other positives or and have there been any negatives, especially with that persona of you being that sort of cocky, arrogant character that you were in the early days, especially?
I can't think of any negative impacts that I'm aware of.
Yeah.
I guess it's maybe down to the fact that when I'm in the ring, I don't announce that I'm a printer or, you know, I don't burst through the curtain and go, oh, I printed this t-shirt. Like, yeah, you should support me. You know, it's, I kind of keep it separate for that side of it, I guess, because I'm Jimmy Vice and I'm there. I'm not Jamie Gilbert. That's part of the amazing world of wrestling. You do get to go and be somebody else. You get to leave all your crap and all your home life and all your stresses and worries and holdups, and you get to leave them all at that door. And when you walk through, you know, I am Jimmy Vice, you know, it's my escape from real life. So yeah. So I don't bring my printing into the ring. I speak to the guys backstage and I'll speak to people afterwards, but yeah, it's kept separate. So I'm not aware of any negatives, but.
So there's no negatives on the business as a wrestler, but obviously 2020 has had one or two negatives on your business. But I want to point out one or two things that I noticed last year, because at the start of 2020 or going into 2019, or the end of 2019, going into 2020, you had a lot of pots on the fire. You were looking at moving into a new premises and, you know, you were talking about stuff like that. You were talking about new equipment. You mentioned the screen printing earlier on, and everything seemed to be geared towards you really making a push for it. And then obviously lockdown hit. So that, you know, all of a sudden the negatives hit. But I got to be honest with you, as a business owner, you didn't sit there and, or you may have done for a short period of time, felt sorry for yourself. During 2020, I didn't see too much of that. There might have been the odd wavering moment. But during 2020, I saw a guy who was pushing raffles and prize draws with local businesses, trying to get the local community involved in helping those local businesses, to push them forward so that 2020 was not going to be negative for everybody. It wasn't going to be great, of course. You know, nobody was going to, you know, unless, of course, you work for Amazon, I guess, or actually own Amazon, I should say, not work for Amazon, because even then you don't make a lot of money. But all the pitfalls of 2020, and I know that in 2019, I noticed, you know, you lost a council grant as well that you were hoping to expand. During 2020, when you could have said, you know what, I've had enough now, you didn't. You kept pushing forward, and not just for yourself, but for other businesses as well. I mean, I guess there isn't really a question there. It's really just a thing to say, well done. Because I saw a lot of negativity towards businesses during 2020. People saying, you know, the rest of us in lockdown, you should stop selling. It's not fair. But you weren't like that. You know, what kept you going, not only for yourself, but for everybody else during that time?
So, I mean, the start of lockdown, I was very fortunate because I was still working on the bins. So it wasn't in my plan to leave when I did, but I just had enough. I couldn't do it anymore. It was backbreaking. It was horrible. So that kind of forced my hand. But with that side of it, so it was tough. I'm not going to sit here and say that it's been easy or it's been, it's been, again, a roller coaster. So I'm a big advocate of mindset and positivity, and I've had my dark days and I've had my bright sunny days and everything in between, but yeah, on my good days it's always come off the back of, you know, being positive and looking for the positives in every situation. So, you know, I'll pull one just from memory because it happened only a few weeks ago. Went out to my car, at the end of a shift here at the studio, completely flat, had two massive screws in it. So I couldn't drive it home. So I knew the next day I needed tyres and I priced them up roughly. It was going to be about 140 quid. So instead of sitting there feeling, you know, sad, feeling sorry, I was gutted, devastated, but I turned it around and I turned it into, okay, let's see what the positive is of this. I've got a box of Club Tropicana t-shirts at the studio. Let's sell some of them. It doesn't only support me, it supports my tag partner, Eddie Cobain, because he makes a little bit off them. It supports the printing business, but it also buys me new tyres so I can drive my car. So that turned a negative situation into selling. I think I sold 5 t-shirts just from putting that status up. So yeah. As I've said, it's not an exact science, and I have my down days and I have my unmotivated days and I have my tough days just like everybody else. But I always, always try and approach it positively and look for the positives in everything. So that raffle or the prize draw that I did, yes, it was to help me financially get through and to get to me to where I needed to be. Obviously, I had one eye on the studio at the time, but it also supported 8 other businesses. It also helped increase their following on social media, because every time I shared that post, I would link every single business in there. So people would be going to their page. People would then be buying products from them because they weren't aware of them or because they just wanted to support somebody local. So it felt amazing to do that. You know, it was, and you know, there's lots of people that have done it and it's a great feeling, and it's basically turning that negative into a positive and right, okay, we're in this, nothing we can do about it, so what can we do to move forward together? Like, and that was basically my drive for it.
Brilliant. I mean, as we get to the end of the interview then, where can they find your business and obviously your wrestling persona online?
Yeah, so Facebook is just JG Printing UK. I think I had to put it on as Facebook. And then Instagram, I believe. So I'm so not social media savvy. I think it's JG Printing _. And then Jimmy Vice's his page is The Exceptional Sugar Jimmy Vice on Facebook. So,
well, all that's left for me to say really is to thank you, Jamie, for coming on the show tonight. And to remind everybody, it's something that you've got on your website, that we should all be striving for perfection. And I think by the sounds of things, that's what you're looking forward to do in 2022 or 2021 and 2022 onwards. Both as a wrestler and as a local businessman. So thanks very much for coming on, Jamie.